Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. I've got Kareem Bechet with us today. He is a principal consultant at Living Orgs, speaker, facilitator, consultant. Kareem, welcome to our program today.
Thank you so much, Derek. It's an honor to be here.
You help businesses to become insanely efficient. Your purpose at Living Orgs is to empower organizations towards a clear and agile structure and stronger purpose. And you're an industry leading consultant in the areas of holacracy and building adaptive organizations. So let's talk for a few minutes. You've helped dozens of companies. Tell me first, though, why did you get into this business? What brought you to this position that you're in today?
Thank you. I mean, I think in the vein of where I see a lot of successful startups is it's something that I needed that wasn't out there. I started as a customer. So my experience is actually, I'm originally from Egypt and I moved to Boston where I did a master's in divinity, theological studies. Okay. And then I did an MBA. So I kind of really have that confluence of the focus on the human element, but also definitely on the processes in the business. And, you know, to think about any organization, it's just basically a collection of people working together behind a singular purpose. And I got really passionate about clarifying and strengthening both people's relationship to their purpose and also clarifying and strengthening their relationships to each other. And I found that once an organization focuses on this, so much falls into alignment in terms of getting to their goals.
That's awesome. Can you give me some broad examples of some companies that what state they were in when you started to work with them and how you were able to get them to maintain focus and be more efficient?
Absolutely, I'd love to. So one company that I'm working with are a 540 person company, and they started out like many companies do with the spirit of innovation, entrepreneurship. It's what got them to where they are. Right. But they grew to a place now where that same spirit isn't working well for them anymore because with everybody just being an innovator, they're just knocking into each other. Teams aren't working well together. Communication's falling apart. Blame is being handed. Politics are entering the system. And so it's very typical in any organization or any structure where the strengths that made it work are now working against you.
Right.
So what we did is basically a multi-formed approach. The first thing we did is we approached the structure itself, Derek. And what we do is this thing called organizing around the work and not around the people. This is something borrowed from a system called Holacracy.
Okay.
So basically what we say is instead of, you know, Derek is the CEO, Kareem is the CTO, you know, all these ideas, these approximations that we have that are called positions.
Right.
Instead we say, let's divide the work into roles, these things called roles. And it's not one person per role, actually. A person can fill up to 10 or 12 roles and multiple people can be filling a role. So instead we think like, what are these discrete bodies of work that need to happen? And people can then move in and out of these roles fluidly based on what the circumstance is. And this causes, you know, a multitude of advantages for the company. The first of which is incredible clarity because every role has very explicit accountabilities, which are different than kind of job descriptions.
Right.
They're more like, what are you actually responsible for day by day? And these accountabilities change as the work happens. So all of a sudden, you're actually mapping out the work that is actually happening in the company instead of just a few positions here and there.
How radical is this approach? I mean, are you redefining what the position is because people are holding multiple descriptions of what they're doing, correct?
Exactly. So not just redefining what the position is, I'm removing the concept of position entirely.
Yeah, wow.
Because think about it, Derek. I mean, if right now, for example, you know, you and I are talking about something that I am a subject matter expert in. So I have some power in this situation and you're giving that to me. If we were to switch to a topic where you're the subject matter expert, it would be ridiculous if I'm the one speaking the entire time or if I'm the one making decisions. But that's how we have it in organizations. If the boss is in the room, everyone has to defer to them to make the decision constantly. And honestly, I've spoken to a lot of CEOs. They don't want that responsibility all the time. They want to be the strategic They want to own the strategy, but they don't always know the best decision to make. Other people do. So what if power could move fluidly, depending on what we're talking about and what context when it's, so that the person who is the CEO in a different context could be just another person, and someone else has the power because we're talking about a subject that they're the subject matter expert in. That's what fluid roles allows us to have.
That's, I love that. And in our own organization, we try to implement things like that sometimes, but we don't know what to call it. And, yeah, exactly. And yeah, as a CEO, I do desire that in a strong way. What does that do for the person that's empowered? I mean, does it empower them? What transformations have you seen for the person that's not maybe in the upper senior management position, but they're coming in as an expert? What have you seen for them personally as well, as far as their role and the culture of the organization?
Yeah, I would say, Derek, the most thing that it does is it shines a light, because it offers you now the responsibility. And with great power comes great responsibility. You're not allowed anymore to fall into the victim mentality of, well, the CEO's after me, nobody listens to me in this company, I think we're doing the wrong thing, but nobody wants to hear what I have to say. You know, typical complaints that people fall into, or, you know, so-and-so's against me and they're trying to like oust me, and all this political garbage that we do all the time in companies. Right. Instead, you're like, you know what? You're very clear about what you're responsible for and what you're not. And once you're responsible for something, you have entire autonomy to make this decision. So you have, and if something's not working in the structure, you have the ability to come to a specific format of governance and change the structure to make it better for not just for you, but for everyone in the company. So there's no more, we don't allow anymore for the victim mentality of like throwing up your hands and be like, this isn't working for me, do something about it. And you're actually given the opportunity and the structure by which to do something about it. And that causes all sorts of transformation. You find people who really step into this power and own up to it and grow in really beautiful ways, both CEOs who learn how to let go power and people who learn how to step into it. And you find people who don't like that structure. They want to hide in the cave of victimhood. They want to hide in the cave of the system doesn't work for me. And then they end up the system doesn't work very well for them.
When do you realize that this is something that might work for you? What do I identify for my own business to say, hey, this is time for me to be more effective with my organization?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking that question. And yeah, I want to say that the majority of companies I work with are in the 20 to 80 person range.
Okay.
This just happens to be my most recent and largest client, the 500 person company. But yeah, I would say usually there are a lot of signs that signify to me. So I do with all of my clients something called a culture and process audit, that once they get a signal, once they have a sense that this might be useful to them, I do, you know, a 60-question survey to everyone in the organization, and we do a deep analysis of what's working and not working about their culture and their processes. And then we customize the implementation based on these things. But I would say definitely the feeling by leadership, starting with the CEO, but anyone in a leadership position, that they're becoming a bottleneck when they don't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, they keep being CC'd on emails, and they're like, why am I on this email? Why are people looking to me to make this decision? Why am I being asked about the color of the, I don't know what, I don't care. Like, that's not what I want to be spending my time doing.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's interesting. We love projecting these ideas on CEOs and bosses of like those power hungry, bad people, whatever. But in my experience, 99.9% of CEOs I've spoken to want to give more power to their employees. They would love to see empowered, happy, joyful, engaged employees who care about the company as much as they do. And somehow they're unable to do so. They feel like they try and give power over, and that just becomes chaos. Then they take the power back, and then they become the bad boss, and they just can't find the happy medium. And they feel like they're parenting more than they're actually running a business. And honestly, they're like, I don't want to be a parent to children. I want to run the company with a bunch of adults that I love working with, and we're passionate about building what we're building. So that, I would say, is one of the first signs, especially when you know that you have good people. Because it doesn't require bad people for a company to go wrong, as I'm sure you've learned from your experience.
Right.
Like, you could really passionate, well-meaning, good-hearted human beings can crash into each other just as easily as people who are inherently broken, whatever that means. So I think that sense also of like, wow, we have the right people in the room. I feel it. I know it in my gut as a business person that we have the right people in the room. Why are we not performing? Why are we running around in circles? Why are we in meetings talking about the same thing for hours and hours, and I have no idea where we're going? It's death by meeting.
Right.
All of these are signs of things that we can address with a full implementation, all the way from structure to disciplined tactical processes about how to exactly run a meeting, how to move things forward, and also OKRs and strategy about how to really corral the company and focus everyone's attention on goals and be metric driven. Like all of these are aspects that we work with companies on.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, you heard me laugh several times because I can relate to all of these things. And I've got a great team, but we've all gone through these periods in our business. So you talk about how teams can become insanely efficient. You just talked about some things we might be identifying. I can relate to that. You've got good people in the room, and you have some meetings go in the circle, and you say, why are we doing this? How do teams become insanely efficient? Talk to me about that.
Sure. So like I said, the first thing is clarifying the structure. And once you're pretty clear about, okay, now we know exactly what all the accountabilities are, we tell everyone that you have complete authority to act within your accountabilities. And if that authority is not clear, you can clarify that authority. So then you actually create a bunch of entrepreneurs within your company. Hmm. When you think you yourself as an entrepreneur, like what is your reality? Your reality is you have a lot of autonomy and you understand what the boundaries are around you. You know, the market, the board, your finances, so on and so forth. So you basically create mini entrepreneurs inside of your organization. And then we bring in very disciplined tactical processes. By that I mean is I teach people, are you familiar at all with the GTD, David Allen's Getting Things Done?
Yes.
So I teach people getting things done so that individuals know exactly how to manage their workload and know exactly how to prioritize their work based on the priorities set by the company. And I marry that with Holacracy tactical processes, and we put it all into a tool, an online tool called Asana, so that basically all the tasks across the organization are all captured in one place. There are no more tasks being emailed or Slacked to each other. So there's no, you don't get an email all of a sudden, you know, an email chain with like 23 replies, and you have to dig through to be like, wait, what was the actionable thing in there? Same thing with meetings. There are no more meetings where we just get in a room and just talk at each other. Meetings are facilitated. They're incredibly disciplined. And we go through what we call one tension at a time, which is just what is one person sensing? And then what do they think is the next action that should be taken? And they can get some support around from the team. But once that's done, that action gets logged in Asana and we move on to the next thing. And the team learns that kind of what I call the tension resolution cycle of how to sense a need, get that expressed clearly, log an action for it, trust that that action will be taken care of because there's a transparent system and the other person has their own GTD practice as well, and then move on to the next thing. And it's really beautiful. Once you get used to these meetings, Derek, you'll go back to a traditional meeting and want to pull your hair out.
I love it. This is really speaking to me a lot of, you know, all those of us listening that want to be as effective and efficient and productive as we can be and want to empower our team members and employees and don't always know what the next step is or how to most effectively do it. This is great, very tangible steps that we can take. Hey, talk to me about Holacracy 101.
Sure, I'd love to. So Holacracy is basically it's a system for self-governance. So Holacracy itself has a lot of different aspects to it. One is the organizing around the work, not the people. The second piece is the tactical processes, minus the GTD. That was something that I added is also the individual piece, but also like very disciplined tactical meetings and tactical processes. And the third piece is what they call distributed governance. So that is a process by which anybody can suggest a change to the structure. And then there's a very disciplined way where others can maybe object to it or not. And we come to decisions and we change the structure in a distributed fashion. To be honest with you, I think the first two aspects, the organizing around the work, not the people, and the tactical processes, every single company, I can't think of any organization that wouldn't benefit from them.
Right.
The third piece, the distributed governance, I think it depends on the organization. Not because I don't think it's like not, you know, some organizations aren't evolved enough or whatever. I just think it's just not for everyone. It's a particular engagement in a process. And I've developed a way for people to use the first two elements and not the third. And I found that some companies thrive better with just the first two elements.
Wow. That's really cool. you know, it speaks to me a little bit. So have you found what kind of organizational or team changes have you seen have to happen? Have you generally found that the clients you work with, that the team members they have were a good fit and they're able to fall in the system? Have you seen some turnover from this? I mean, what bigger implications has it had on the existing team?
Thank you. I would say, you know, the turnover, because we implemented the system, hasn't been very high at all. Like I would say maybe on average, one out of 50 employees will leave, actually in terms of turnover. But the beauty of it is the system itself doesn't necessarily solve problems for you, but it gives you a lot of clarity. So imagine right now you have a sense of like, man, I'm working with Kareem and I just have a sense he's not a good fit on this team. You just have this good gut intuitive sense that you do as a boss, that you just know I don't fit in this team,
right,
but you can't tell why. So that makes it very personal. Then you have to come and give me feedback and you're not exactly sure what feedback you're giving me. And now it's between me and you. And now I'm going to my colleagues telling them that like Derek's after me, he's trying to get me fired. Right. And then you do actually get me fired and I'm blaming you, you know, and it's just, it's messy. Right. And we just don't know like where we're at. But instead, when we have these really clear accountabilities and roles, not just are you able to look exactly at which roles I'm not doing well, you can start setting metrics per role. So you start saying like, Kareem, I think you're doing well in these six roles, but in these other four roles, I'm not sure about your performance. So let's talk about some metrics that we're going to track, because at every beginning of every tactical meeting, which is once a week, we track metrics for the circle. So talk about being numbers driven. You're looking at metrics every single week with every single team. So you're saying like, I want to track these two or three metrics to look at your performance in these roles. So not only are you going to be able to give me specific feedback, but you're going to be able to train me on where I'm exactly not doing well. And let's say I'm just unable to fulfill these things well. Now, as my lead, you don't have to fire me. You can just say, okay, you're leaving these three or four roles, and why don't you find a different three or four roles? And I found that in companies where people were performing poorly just because they were in the wrong place. And to move someone from one team to another is such a big shift, but to move them in and out of a couple of roles is a much more graceful and less impactful and less kind of less of a culture shock kind of shift. And ultimately, you can have a very clear case of like, wow, you're not fitting in any of the roles we need, and here are the metrics to prove it. It's really not as personal anymore. You're just not a good fit for this company. Yeah. But at least you have the context to have the conversation. And it checks us as bosses also, Derek, right? Like you might be wrong in your gut sense. You might keep thinking this person's not good, but it turns out they just remind you of your younger brother and you don't like them. You know what I mean? Yeah, honestly, because we're human beings too. And a lot of us, if we're humble enough as leaders, we want to check ourselves. We want to follow our assumptions and follow our intuition, but check them.
Right.
You know, so so maybe you'll add metrics and you'll be like, you know what? You're performing great in the roles that I have for you. I have no complaint. So maybe it's more of a cultural thing. Like maybe watch out how you speak to people or how you show up in meetings, and then you can give them feedback somewhere else. Or maybe you need to change somewhere as a leader.
Right.
So it's just like it adds a lot more self-reflection, introspection, humility in leadership as well, which I think are really important.
That's great. I love it. Do you deal with the culture side of things as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I've learned is when you add so much transparency to the system, everything bubbles up to the top. All the power dynamics, everything that's stuck. So for this system to run well, I teach what I call the kung fu of holacracy. The reason I call it kung fu is because, you know, the word kung fu isn't just the martial art. It actually means to attain a discipline with, you know, with hard work and focus. That's what the word kung fu means. So it's about bringing a kind of sense of martial art discipline in your work to really take on leadership and working and efficiency as a personal discipline, as a practice. And when we do that, we teach things like how to give and receive really good feedback, conflict resolution, but really deep conflict resolution, not just, you know, use I statements and be nice to each other and do trust falls, but the depth of how our brain works on conflict, what gets in the way of healthy conflict, all that. And also we do things like how to speak from a role, how to master your intentions, how to not fall into victimhood, all of these things we teach.
Love that. Love it. Mm-hmm. I imagine organizing around the work too, instead of the people, that you start to see a shift in the confidence and the basically people are able to really show their strengths, where a lot of times people feel marginalized in their positions even when they're doing things really well. And so I think that's a great way to show for each other to see what the other strengths are as well.
Perfectly said. Exactly. Yeah. And it's such and also the multiplicity of us, right? I am not just an engineer. I am also an artist. I'm also a father. I'm also creative. Like,
right.
Who knows all the people that work in your company, all the amazing places that they can offer their hard work and their passion and their creativity if you give them room. And with these roles, I can take on a role in a completely different place in the organization without, you know, switching teams. So then you can really get the best out of me and I can feel like I'm being used up well in my organization, which a lot of employees suffer from, is that they feel like they're just like running on second gear the entire time, which is such a shame.
Yeah, no kidding. That's great. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about trust. You mentioned trust earlier. How do you create trust within an organization?
Thank you for asking that. One of the most important things for me, Derek, is that trust needs to be an output of the system, not a requirement. I've spent so much time, you know, both at business school and other places and talking to consultants and looking at consultants. And we do these, you know, trust exercises. Let's do trust falls and all that kind of stuff. And people just roll their eyes. And I think they should, because we're not idiots, right? As human beings, trust is something that is earned. It is not something that you just tell me to do.
Right.
Like, I don't care how many times you tell me to trust you. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, I only trust you when you prove it to me. And actually, most of us start from a place of trust, and then that trust gets degraded over time. So what I say about trust being an output of the system, we build a system that allows for transparency. So for example, like I said, something as simple as this Asana GTD thing. So that every time I ask you for a task, it is now a contract of trust between us that is logged in a system, not hidden somewhere in some email. It is logged in a system. I'm able to follow it. And I know that you have a system of following up by yourself where you're going to comment on every task and let me know how you're prioritizing that work. And if you're going to do it, when you're going to do it, or if you're not going to do it. So again, doesn't mean that everything I ask of you, you're going to do, but it means that you're going to follow up on it. That's what a contract of trust means. Hmm. So that really helps build trust. And it comes to a point, Derek, now where in the system where it's working well, as soon as I just ask you for the task, I can feel my own nervous system relax. It's as good as done.
Right.
Even though it wasn't done yet. So imagine that, where you're not nagging your employees and waiting for people to do things. You just ask for it. And in your mind, you really feel it's as good as done. And you can just relax and go back to work.
Yeah, that's great. That would take a lot of stress off.
For sure. Absolutely. So much of our stress is just tracking each other and like trying to do work for each other and stepping on each other's toes.
Yeah.
The other piece around trust is, again, with this locus of control I was talking about, not being a victim and being an adult in a relationship, is if you and I are working together, Derek, and you're noticing that you're consistently getting disappointed in something I'm doing or not doing. And so now it's up to you as an adult to think, is this an explicit accountability between us? Is this an explicit expectation? Or is this just something that I'm internally, implicitly assuming that Kareem's going to do? Because we all bring so many of these assumptions to work. I'm like, oh, of course he'll CC me on the email to the client. Everybody knows that. I'm like, no, everybody does not know that. That's just an assumption that you have because of another job you had or whatever.
Right.
So instead we say, if it's not explicit, make it explicit. Now that it's explicit, it is an agreement. And now if somebody doesn't do it still and it's explicit, you have very specific and accurate feedback to give them. And they can just apologize, own it like an adult and say, yep, that was on me. I'm sorry, I'm wrong. I'm going to fix it next time. That's how, again, we build trust.
Yeah, that's so great. And that happens so often. I've been studying that with some of our mastermind groups too. About one of the guys talks about how we have, as you kind of implied, expectations that person may not even be aware of. That can be in personal relationships and all around life, but especially in the workplace, it makes it tough for trust. If you examine yourself, is that someone that you put that expectation on them and they had no idea? So thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I've brought it into my marriage and into my life as well. I always do this when I think, you know, if I'm feeling disappointed in my wife or her and me, first of all, I think about what role. Is it me as a father? Is it me as a co-parent? Is it me as a, you know, as a husband? Is it me as a, you know, roommate? Which role here is like kind of deficient? And then I say, like, honestly, is there some expectation you're having of me that's not clear between us? And it's amazing how much I could clear that way. Unfortunately, it doesn't work for everything, but it worked for more than I thought.
Hey, we've got a couple more minutes. I'd love to talk. I want to hear more about the services you have, but first talk to us about handling the dysfunctions of a team. You talk about the top five dysfunctions of a team. I'd like to talk about that.
Sure, I'd love to. So this comes out of actually Patrick Lencioni's book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And he speaks about how when trust starts eroding in a company, what happens is you don't have healthy conflict anymore. Because, you know, I've sat in these board meetings or in these leadership meetings where nobody's disagreeing with each other in a healthy way. So, and everyone's just sitting there quietly because they don't trust each other enough to disagree. And then what happens then is we're not accountable to each other, because what I agree or disagree to in a meeting is not what I'm actually going to go and do. I'm going to go and work around the system, which then makes us not have any attention to results, which then brings us back to the problem of lack of trust. And it becomes a vicious cycle that even good people and good teams can fall into. And I'm sure you've felt that before in your business. I've definitely felt it before there, where it just spirals out of control and you don't know what's going on, but you just know that we're falling apart as a company or as a team. So I address each of these points, one and the other, because the benefit of a spiral is just like it can spiral down, it can also spiral up. So like I said, we build trust, we make clear accountabilities, we make you a very results-oriented team, very focused on results, and that helps us kind of snap out of that spiral of death and instead become a positive building experience.
That's great. So, Kareem, are you available to, can you share information about how, if one of our listeners wanted to talk with you more or get more information about your services, what do they need to do?
I'd love to. Thank you. So my website is www.livingorgs.com. It's as in living organizations, so livingorgs.com. And yeah, on there you'll find more information. You find videos about what we do, about our implementation, a lot of resources there, my blog. And on there you can just book, you know, a free 30-minute consultation with me. If you have any sense that this might be appropriate for your team, it's completely free of charge. We can do a culture survey, culture and process survey of your organization and see if that's a good fit for you and where we can help you.
That's awesome. So that's livingorgs.com.
Livingorgs.com, yes. Awesome.
Kareem, any parting words of wisdom you want to share, a final takeaway for our listeners to consider today?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I just want to acknowledge that I understand that this is my work and this is what I do, is to focus on teams and internal and processes. And for a business owner or a CEO, you're focusing on a million things. But I cannot stress enough to just clean house, like give yourself and your team the gift of focusing inwardly, thinking about your processes, thinking about how you're working together. If you build your house on a solid foundation, your team can really achieve anything in a very changing market and in very changing realities outside. It's great to be product focused, but just don't ignore the foundations of your house, which is the agreements, the processes, the culture, the team, the people your company is made out of. That would be the best thing I would say people should look into.
Awesome. Kareem Bishay, thank you so much for being our guest today. I want to invite our listeners again, go to livingorgs.com. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. Kareem, thanks, and we look forward to following the next great things that you're going to do.
Thank you so much for the opportunity there, because it's been a pleasure.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.